a right. The police won't have to work as much, and there's always a possibility of what? Coercement. But you're going to say, well, DNA doesn't lie, but it's also an infringement of your rights.
It's also true that the people who manipulate the results can lie.
Elementary.
You know, that's true.
But that,
police force
that,
can
that
screw
doesn't
up.
Count because this is the United States of America and we're all good guys.
Well, again, getting back to specific measures that the mayor has taken that affect the homeless population and Street News, we're talking with India Washington, or just India, if you will, editor of Street News, the largest and oldest street newspaper in the country, sold by homeless people and sold by vendors who are near homelessness as well to, you know, make coffee money, if nothing else, and also to get out the word about what's going on from sectors of, well, from writers you don't usually hear from. What's been the impact? Specifically, what measures has the mayor taken that have impacted the homeless? Any particulars for us?
It's catch 22. They will get you out of the subways. They will get you out of the park benches. You're not allowed to lay down because that's a crime nowadays. If you're seen laying down, you have to get up or you'll be arrested.
Is that
you
anywhere?
You have a lot of harassment, in the subways, in the Penn stations. The only place that's being a little lax is the Port Authority on 42nd Street and 8th Avenue when it's cold.
Mm-hmm. How is the weather now in New York City?
It's coming along. We had a snowstorm. Now it's moving up, but it's windy. It's going to hit 50 pretty soon. And when it gets warmer, you're going to see a more influx of homeless people. Mm-hmm. But right now, you have a lot of mod squads and people dressed up and plainclothesmen who are police that are really just jamming you. I mean, they're really filthy McNasty. That's the word.
Now,
they're,
you know, here nice. In Santa Cruz,
they're filthy McNasty, and Mayor Giuliani knows how to go to left field and say it's just propaganda.
Well, I know that the mayor, got some rather notorious publicity for cracking down on protests around AIDS and inadequate AIDS funding and gay rights, and you know that there was a serious. He essentially tried to shut down these protests, right?
He has. He started off with the $1 million Youth Black March, with the barricades going up, and when you have it downtown in front of City Hall, it's the same thing. Everything is cramped where they're trying to incite a riot. And what's happening is you have the minority police officers not saying anything. I mean, you have a lot of minority organizations that's part of the police force. They're afraid of their job, so they're not saying a damn word. They're keeping it to themselves, and they're saying, well, it's the political leaders and the minority leaders in the community who should do something. They're afraid of their job.
You know, I heard about, from a man who migrated from New York about a year ago, year and a half ago, that there was a significant decision regarding showing your artwork in public, that it was a legal form of expression.
It is. It still is. The thing is, Mayor Giuliani and the community, I think it's called the BID, Business Income Corporation, they've now selected different sites where you can't sell Frankfurters or sell art, even if you have a vendor's license. And they're trying to also do away with newsstands where you have to bid for newsstands, which means you will be able to sell advertisement, but they're doing away with individual owners who own newsstands.
It'll
end up being like McDonald's or Burger King.
Now, does Street? I know they're trying to do. They've done something like that in San Francisco, and the various papers are fighting back by a lawsuit against Willie Brown's kind of sanitized news kiosks. But let me ask you this: Do Street News, the name of your paper, Street News vendors, do they need to have a license to be on the streets of
New York? They won't sell us a license. They will only give licenses to veterans, and they must be selling books or wallets or something like that.
Well, let me ask you this, and what are they being arrested for selling street news on?
Of course, they will generally take the papers, arrest them, give them a DAT, which is a desk appearance ticket. But first, nowadays, they'll fingerprint you to see if you have any previous charges.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can give you a DAT, a desk appearance ticket, but they keep your papers, and you have to go back, and you will either pay a fine or do community service.
Well, isn't this putting a crimp in the sales of street news?
Exactly. They've taken at least 65% of our sales. At one time, it was as high as 80%.
Hmm. Well, so are the police just sort of doing this when they feel like it, or are they doing it systematically,
it's
or what's
basically coming? It's basically coming from the police officers and the Port Authority and Transit Authority,
But is this discouraging vendors from doing this, or are vendors still out there?
For the new people, yes. That may be one of the reasons why we're not getting as many new vendors, even though there's an influx of homelessness. But for the old timers, we just keep on doing it. I mean, I've been in this business for 9 years, going on 10. So I mean, it's still finding, and you have to do.
I know here in Santa Cruz, we sell Street Spirit, the San Francisco paper, and sometimes we sell the Street Shit Sheet, which is my paper. Newsletter, actually, and we had some hassle from the police department, but they eventually had to back off because part of the city code is you cannot go after newspaper vendors unless they're acting inappropriately in some other way.
Okay, we sell a lot of papers on Broadway near the Ticketron, and where people will buy tickets to see plays, and now the police are trying to stop us there, so they're doing a lot, and it's beefed up. They brainstorm, especially during election time and during the holidays. They tried to stop us. I mean, we are basically a pain in their ass.
I think your paper is a great paper, and I think, it's so dense with information, I can never finish it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How can people get a copy of the paper? Can they address it, be reached at? Or?
They could take a subscription. They could write to Street News, 144-46 76th Avenue, Flushing, New York, 11367. The paper costs $1.50, but you can take out a subscription for 6 issues, and that's $20. A year subscription or 12 issues is $35.
That's really quite a bargain considering the thickness of the paper and the fact you got to mail it off in the post.
Yeah, I think so. The most important thing is Street News does not pimp the homeless. Now, I'm going to mention this again. I'm glad I'm on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the homeless papers have maybe 20 pages or 10 pages or 15 pages, and they will sell the paper for $1. And they will have one story and big print. We sell newsworthy items. So if you feel sorry for the homeless, that's one thing. This is a newspaper. Unfortunately, it's not selling as fast as other major homeless papers. But people will say, I can't read it all. I can't thumb through it. And that makes me feel good because there's information. It's a lot of information that's not in the major papers because they are governed by their advertisers and, of course, Big Brother.
Right, definitely. And I think that to get that information, not just to support homeless people who are selling the paper, but to get out the word, it's really crucial that folks tune into these papers. Are you on the internet yet? We're hoping that
we're on the internet. We have 3 emails, and we also have 3 websites. And if you want it, I could run it. I don't want to waste your time. But the email is streetnews@othersides.com.
streetnews@othersides.com. And for those who do want, the websites and so forth, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will put you in touch with those websites after or even while we're on the air. Just give a call to 423-HUFF.
I want to also...
Sure.
Give you recognition, my brother, because ever since I met you, you've always been for real, and you tell it exactly like a TIS, And it's also been a pleasure dealing with you, and I hope our relationship and marriage will go a long, long time.
Hey, you're exposing me before the world, but hey, it's always been a pleasure talking to you, Indio. You're you preside over a much bigger operation than I do, and you're doing good work there. Let's keep in touch. And again,
no question. And you know what, Bob? You know what the little old lady said when she pissed in the sea?
Tell me.
Every little bit helped.
I would call that a form of yellow journalism, and leave you in New York City. And thank you very much, Indio.
And can you keep a secret?
Go ahead.
I love you.
Hey, thank you, Indio.
Thank you, and keep the good work up.
All right.
God bless you, my brother.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
Giving you the benefit of years of experience of riding on subways. Now, you know the IRT and the BMT, where you change, you get off, and you get on?
No.
Well, listen. It's uptown by local to Van Cortlandt Park. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on, and then downtown by local to Sheep's Head Bay. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, then up on the east side to Pelham Bay Park. Wake up, get out, go down, cross over, go up, get on, and then way out to Brooklyn and Far Rockaway. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on again. But be sure you wake at the end of the line, or you'll wake up to a $50 fine. You got that?
Uptown by local to Sheep's Head Bay, then the downtown...
No, you got it all wrong. Now listen, it's uptown by local to Van Cortlandt Park. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on, and then...
Hey, mister, what's the matter? You're telling the lady all wrong. Hey, lady, you want to know how to go uptown? You listen to me. You go uptown by local to Bronx River Park. Wake up, get out, go down, cross over,
no,
go
no,
up,
no,
get
no,
on,
no, young
get
man,
in.
You're telling her all wrong. Pardon me. You go up on the east side to Pelham Bay Park. Wake up, get out, go down, cross
hey,
over, go up,
hey,
get
lady,
on,
like you're hipping her all wrong, like she's going
to
get lost.
Uptown,
I'll tell you how to go.
Downtown by local.
Tunnels underground, then fly through the night. Coffee Roasting Company in front of you.
Kenny.
Kenny, you've got a sign. This, I'd rather be working. This is the Pits, and a cup from the Coffee Roasting Company in front of you, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company. And you're panhandling.
Yes, I am panhandling. Right now, work is kind of tight. And so this is basically what I do to stay alive. I have a place to live at the local areas, the armory and stuff like that, and through the ISSP church groups, and I ordinarily get fed because there's a lot of food that's available in the town of Santa Cruz, but you can't live on freebies, as you know, like totally, and it's really hard to live anywhere without a little bit of cash money to take the bus so you can go look for work.
What's your average a day, would you say, that you make doing this kind of work?
It has been very, very slow recently. Ordinarily, $5 a day.
That's pretty poor wages. How many hours a day do you do it?
On an average, about 4 hours.
So that's about $1.25 an hour.
That's why I say I'd rather be working, you know.
Do people offer you work?
No, I don't get offered any work or anything like that.
How long have you been doing this?
This is my second year of doing this, and ordinarily I only do it during the wintertime because work is pretty tight during the winter because of the weather. During the summertime, I make enough to stay alive.
What kind of work do you do?
I do lots of things, mostly odd jobs, but professionally, when I get a chance, I'm an asphalt paver, and I run a backhoe or things like that. But during this time of the year, there's just no work.
How long you been in Santa Cruz?
Actually, I hang out in Santa Cruz during the wintertime because. But other than that, I live up in the San Lorenzo Valley because it's easier to get work up there.
Where were you born?
I was originally born in Massachusetts, and I moved to Los Angeles, and in 1976 I came to this area.
So you're kind of an old-timer here.
Yes, I've been here for many years.
Now, you've heard the current controversy around the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night outside?
Yes, I'm very familiar with it, you know.
Have you yourself gotten tickets under this law?
No, I haven't. I ordinarily stay at places that none of the authorities go to or could find.
What do you think of this law? Is it a fair law? Is it an unfair law? What's your sense of it?
Okay, my basic idea of it is it's illegal for the homeless people to stay on private property. You know, it's the law.
That's trespass.
Yes, trespassing. You know,
of course, it's also illegal under the sleeping ban to be on any public property.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Public and private properties, it's illegal. And the one thing is, where could we possibly find an area, you know, like for the homeless people to congregate? The number one wouldn't cost the county a small fortune, you know, like both for getting the area, and they'd have to
It's actually legal to sleep in the county, although sheriffs will lie to you about that issue. Here comes the mayor. We'll have to ask her what she thinks. Mayor Byers, when are you going to end the sleeping ban?
Hi, Robert. Nice to see you.
I didn't get an answer on that. Where can homeless people sleep, Mayor Byers? Apparently there's no answer to that question.
Oh, you had the tape recorder out, so that's probably a lot of it.
Oh, I think she has no answer even when the tape recorder is out.
It's gonna be a very difficult situation to do anywhere in the city limits of Santa Cruz, you know, just because, you know, like as we were discussing earlier, the trespassing situation, because most of the area here is either owned by the city,
Well, it's not trespassing. The law talks about specifically it's being illegal to fall asleep on any public property. Public property, if you're on public property mostly, like on a public sidewalk, that's not considered to be trespassing.
Can I get you guys something to eat?
He might want something. I'm interviewing him.
I'm fine right now, thank you. Some people have come by and already given me food.
That's a very nice offer, though, man. I really commend you for offering that. Let me give you a flyer.
You know, women walk more determined than they ever have. Women walk with a stronger stride than they ever did before. Take a look, sisters and brothers, 'cause you're gonna find you've got another kind of woman who will ask a lot and give a lot and live a whole lot more. My friend, you and I have come a long way, and we're gonna go farther still. For the more I learn about myself and my world, you know, the more both of us will.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host for this 2.5 hour slot until 1:30. Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the March 21st edition, Sunday, March 21st, 1999. And we are going through a varied program. We're hoping to turn soon to the county camping ordinance and a number of interviews and, well, some analysis of what that county camping ordinance is. I think I've been putting out some misinformation on that ordinance that I want to correct. The It's not clear yet because, again, we haven't heard from the county council. We haven't heard from the county board of supervisors, supervisor for our district, District 3, Marty Wormhout, who, by the way, will be appearing tomorrow at the Java Junction at 5 o'clock. That's at Seabright and Portola. Is it Portola? No, it's Eastcliff. Seabright and Eastcliff down there at the Java Junction Cafe. She'll be talking to constituents. If you want to find out what the real dope is or who the real dopes are around the county camping ordinance, the laws that regulate sleeping in your vehicle or sleeping outside, come on down 5 o'clock tomorrow. Also at 5:30 tomorrow at the Cafe Pergolesi, Councilmember Chris Crone will be having his pre-council nuptials, which he has with those who want to come down and talk to him about the different things coming up on the agenda. He's the only council member who has such an open session. I went to the last one a couple weeks ago, and frankly, it was a productive one in the small ways that, you know, extremely small ways, but he did listen to us, and he, some of the things that we said, he brought forward to the city council meeting. They weren't really very significant things, because there wasn't anything particularly significant on the agenda. It had to do with the Citizens Police Review Board and the minor changes being proposed by that largely sellout, cover-up, fig leaf body. If anybody wants to discuss or debate that issue with me, I would be more than happy to talk to them. I think those words really aptly cover what the Citizens Police Review Board has been not doing, or actually has been doing, for the last 5 years. Essentially nothing around any meaningful review of complaints about the Santa Cruz Police Department. So there are those two meetings happening. Marty Wormhout, supervisor at the Java Junction tomorrow at 5, Monday. And also Monday at 5:30 at the Cafe Pergolesi downtown, Christopher Crone, who I regret to announce after his call into our talk show on Thursday. We have a version of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, runs from 6 to 8 on Thursday, has not called back, in spite of the fact that he expressed a desire that he wanted to talk to us off air and work out some kind of real alternative to the pretty straight crap that's coming out of the city council around the sleeping ban. Lack of anything substantive, no real response to the need of homeless people to sleep at night. Chris, we had hoped, was going to propose a real alternative and talk to us about it and be ready to present such an alternative at the city council meeting on Tuesday. But as of 12:25 on Sunday, right now, we haven't heard back from. Could this be him calling in?
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, this is David Silva. I just want to talk about a rumor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it would be fair to put the sleeping ban vote on a June ballot when the students aren't here, just like it really wasn't too fair to have this second reading in the spring break when the students aren't here. But basically, these human rights decisions should never be on a June ballot. It should always be on March or March or November ballot.
Before you go any further, what is the rumor that you've heard?
I'm not at liberty to comment at this time.
Now, let's not be cryptic. I take it you're saying that there has been a rumor that the city council may want to put the issue of the sleeping ban repeal initiative on a ballot.
Yeah, the sleeping ban repeal included the safe zones.
What's wrong with that? Didn't you work for a year to have
but to have it put on a ballot of 2 weeks after all the students leave town is when it's dealing with a human rights issue, not dealing with a particular, old-timers residential zoning issue, but having to do actually with human rights. Sleeping ban, not the camping ordinance, the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be put on a June ballot. I think that's real sneaky and real shitty.
Mm-hmm. So you heard a rumor to that effect?
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah.
I think you also had a point that you felt you called during the break, and you suggested something about if the sleeping ban repeal did pass through some miracle in the next few months, either through ballot or through the city council, and there were safe zones set up in industrial areas, this would in fact make a trespass activity by homeless people for sleeping less likely, right?
Yeah, well, actually, there would be a slight increase in the visibility of the homeless. But what that would mean is that there'd be a great decrease in the amount of trespass. The current laws we have encourage trespass so that people can hide from the police. And so if we come together more as a community and allow homeless people to be visible at night, then we're decreasing the trespass instead of putting them in this criminalization zone, we have them as part of the community. I think it'd be very healthy.
Yeah, and I'm hoping again that I want to put out another call for people to come on Tuesday to the City Council. Come at 6 for the meal, come at 7 for oral communications, and I guess 7:30 to 8, more or less, is when the sleeping band stuff.
Yeah, I haven't got a hold of SOBA yet, but you know, I got a message into them. And
what is SOBA?
SOBA is the group. I mean, the hottest group in town, man.
And what about them?
They may be showing up from 6 to 7 City Hall to play for us.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
So
I'm waiting to hear from them. Hey, Sobe, if you're out there, call me.
So
you got my number.
So not only put on your black widow weeds and maybe have your baker's hats and, you know.
Baker's hats and bongo drum.
And have your pies in hand, but also, you know, and your sleeping bags and blankets, of course, in case you want to lie down in front of the City Council and get a little shut-eye while it's still legal before 11 o'clock.
Bring your mariachis, too.
You know, but you can also bring your dancing shoes, right?
Yeah, dancing shoes. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if it wasn't for my bum knee, I would probably bring on my dancing shoes.
And we're still waiting for anybody who wants to volunteer to help us distribute flyers today at the Hemp Festival. So all you folks out there who are going to the Hemp Festival or want to put in a half an hour to an hour giving away flyers, do give a call to us at 423-HUFF.
Now is the time, volunteers. Now is the time.
Yes, definitely. Call in 423-HUFF and put in a little time giving out flyers so we can actually get some folks to come to the City Council meeting with or without marijuana or hemp, your choice.
Yeah.
Maybe a stiff puff of medicinal marijuana might be good medicine for this City Council.
Oh, the City Council members are probably at the festival right now sampling stuff.
Indeed. Well,
okay, my friend.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
And if you want to give us a little sample of what you're up to and what you think of what we're up to, give us a call at 427-3772 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. Our lines are open at the moment. And, hey, that was quick.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, you guys are having a hemp festival?
Well, actually, we're not, but the town is, and it's down at the Civic Auditorium even as we speak.
Oh,
you know where that is?
That's definitely where I have to go.
Hey, you know, whip on down there, and if you want, give us a call first at 423-HUFF. We'd love to have you give out some flyers while you're out there. We can show
you. Well, I can just tell you that I'm a chiropractor, and for certain medicinal purposes, I really think the government needs to relax their policies and allow people to reduce their need for really toxic medications.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're all adults here. I don't see what the government's business is interfering, whether it's, you know, marijuana for recreational purposes or marijuana for medicinal purposes. I mean, and marijuana generally, I think it's agreed, is so far less toxic than alcohol or cigarettes that it just isn't even funny. It's just, it's a huge joke, and it actually, it's an ominous kind of commentary on what's going on. The police departments use this as a fundraising activity, and the right wing uses it as a sort of a control process whereby you can actually, interestingly enough, I heard the, I don't know if you listened to Free Radio Santa Cruz earlier today, caller, but there was a thing called the Rules of Engagement about Waco. It was it's a very interesting film, which I haven't seen, but I heard the soundtrack to this morning, some of it. And one defense made by the agents who essentially precipitated a situation that killed women and children and many people in the Branch Davidian shootout or burnout, about 5 or 6 years ago. One defense that was being made was that it was that they claimed that there were drugs being used there, and that therefore they could use the military and these kind of military vehicles and tactics rather than police tactics. And the idea that, see, there's a, as you probably know, there's a posse comitatus law in this country that says you can't, the military cannot be used against the American people in police actions. It's just not, you know, not doable. I guess there are exceptions where the National Guard is federalized and so forth, but generally speaking, you don't use the military against the American public, and that's forbidden by law, except in cases of drug activity. And that's really an ominous kind of exception. Sorry, I had to throw that in at you, caller.
Well, thank you very much. I'm learning a little bit every day.
Hey, thank you for listening to Free Radio, and let us know how the Hemp Festival was. The next show is 6 to 8, my show anyway, on Thursday, but you can call in any time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
I need a bride, but the dark thing. spring is for sowing. Word to the wise that the earth must provide. Soon to untangle the middle of growing. First things first when you get to the land. A rich man eats when he wishes.
Show is from older times because I'm an older guy. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier Robert Norris. Call-in lines are open here on Bathrobes Pier's broadsides, and that's 427-3772 if you want to help with the dialogue here or challenge us. Tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Give us some information. Give us some updates. If you want to help with the sleeping ban cause, the cause of ending the law that makes it criminal for homeless people to sleep at night, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Particularly today, we're looking for some folks to distribute flyers out at the Hemp Festival before all those hempsters get so stoned that they don't know what's happening. 423-HUFF, if you want to help out there. Next, we're going to do a kind of a retrospective on a Voices from the Village show. Voices from the Village is a Channel 71 cable show, which some of you can get if you get cable. They've been doing a lot of stuff around homelessness and the sleeping ban. We've been finally, one positive thing about all this runaround goose chase strangeness that the Buyers Task Force has been doing, essentially lots of legwork but not much substance, has been that there has been increased attention being given to the issue of the failure of the city to let homeless people sleep at night, the actual intervention of the city to deny homeless people basic civil rights. And this is becoming increasingly known, although there's a surprising number of people who still haven't heard of the sleeping ban after all these years and after all these months of task force discussions and so-called focus groups and so forth. But one positive thing has been that some more information has been coming out, and no thanks to the Sentinel particularly, but groups, or I should say programs, like Community Television's Voices from the Village, Club Cruise, have been devoting more attention to the issue. And the last, or perhaps it was the show before last from Voices from the Village, I guess it was on February 25th or thereabouts, it had Charlie Phillips and Joe Grossman as joint hosts, and the guests were Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice, as well as a very articulate panel of folks, Eleanor Foresta, who's a homeless woman who really gives dynamite speeches at city council and prints them up very well. She's severely disabled. A lot of the just getting up there is physically a pain for her. If you've been to city council meetings or watched them on television, she's the articulate woman in the wheelchair who really speaks so clearly to the issues. Then there's No Guns, the woman in white. You often see her at the city council meetings. She's a person really concerned about the need in Santa Cruz for a campground for homeless people. There's David Silva, who you've actually heard on the air if you've been listening to this show, as recently as 15 or 20 minutes ago. David is single-handedly, the powerhouse, almost single-handedly, behind the sleeping ban repeal work. He's a Green Party stalwart. He was a city council candidate in 1996, his campaign was abruptly terminated by Sergeant Andy Crane when Silva was thrown into a concrete post, or pillar, right outside city council as part of then-Mayor Mike Rutkin's drastic cut-off the demonstrators at the knees approach, which is what he did on September 10th, 1996. Again, Eleanor, no guns, David Silva, Chris, a homeless UCSC student, and finally, a man named Robert DeFreitas of the Downtown Neighbors for Balance. Robert DeFreitas has really said some pretty horrible things at city council meeting and at the meetings of the Downtown Neighbors. He's a bit mellower and milder on this broadcast that you're going to hear. We're going to play you selections now from this Voices from the Village panel on the sleeping ban and homelessness. And there's also, I don't know if we're going to get to it, but there's an insert interview with Father Mike Marini and callers. There are also some callers who call in, Linda Lemaster, Dan Hopkins, Roxana Kistapache, folks you've heard on our show. They're advocates for homeless folks and for basic civil rights and for basic civility, as far as I'm concerned, in the Santa Cruz community, where civility does not mean, as Cynthia Matthews might have us believe, speaking in a quiet voice and using proper diction and grammar and respecting the right of Mike Rutkin to go on for an hour and a half at city council meeting babbling away. That's an exaggeration, but he does seem to take an awful long amount of time to say what he has to say. But civility means a civilized community that respects the basic human rights of all of us, rich and poor. And that's something that I'm afraid Councilmember Matthews, Councilmember Rutkin, and Mayor Byers have a lot to learn about and have a long way to go on that issue. Perhaps all of us do, but certainly around the issue of sleeping, this council is miserable in what it has not done and the amount of energy and time it has spent not doing it. But getting back to Voices from the Village, let's hear a little bit of that. First, you'll hear Eleanor talking very articulately about this issue.
My position is that, in answer to your question, no, we haven't done enough. I don't think we've done anything but do a lot of talking. And I'd like to add or comment on what the three speakers before me said. I don't agree that we've done well, that's David, and then I don't agree, I certainly don't agree that it's any group or member of our society's voice should be heard in terms of whether anyone has a night's sleep. This is a basic human right, a basic human need, and no one can vote on it, deny it, comment. No one has an input on it. If you've got some constructive information or input for the city council to take some action, yes. I also disagree with the speaker to my left. In terms of skills, I think that is derogatory. To say that we need to learn how to live, that somehow or other, if you've lost your home, you don't know how to do certain things and you're lesser than. And I don't think that anyone chooses things. Well, I think to say also that a person made a wrong choice, and that's why they're homeless. Mm-mm. One-third of all American men, and another point I'd like to bring out, too, is I don't want to compare with other cities. This gentleman over here said we're doing better. In other cities, it's legal, so we're not really doing better than others. As far as services, the services are nil compared to the needs. I lost my train of thought there. I just feel that everything that's being said here is going around the real issue. People... of homeless men here in Santa Cruz who are disabled veterans, either mentally or physically, whether it's a major contributor to homelessness is the seriously flawed workers' compensation system that allows clear-cut cases to be stonewalled by insurance companies. This is a major cause of homelessness. This brings children, this brings women, and also another factor, the college students and the small children. My basic feeling is that no one has the right to vote on someone else's sleep, and no one has the right to judge a person because they lost their home, and Santa Cruz is doing nothing over the issue but talking. There's a lot of money out there. During November, December, and January, Washington appropriated nearly $1 billion, and maybe a little more, dollars to combat homelessness. That money is there for us. In President Clinton's own words in January, after the first $850,000 was appropriated, when he added another $150,000.
$150 million.
$150 million, thank you. It was $150 million. He said that every American should have a home. We're committed to end homelessness in America. And, of course, we'd like to see the things that caused it to change, too. That's my position. We're not going... The city of Santa Cruz is not doing their part.
Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on the initial question?
I would.
Yes, please.
I feel that the attitude towards homelessness needs to change in general, that it is a basic human right, and it's also a very viable option that many people believe is a very simple, healthy lifestyle, and, you know, I think everyone should be able to live off the land. I think homeless campgrounds are a very good idea. We have plenty of land here in Santa Cruz to start something like that. It would be very innovative. Something like the Homeless Garden Project, you know, started here. I feel like sleeping in a car is a very viable option. There's plenty of parked vehicles around our city. I don't see what difference it makes if people are in there during the wee hours of the night sleeping. And I think we really have solutions to homelessness. You know, we don't all need homes to live in. Some people believe it's not very natural to live in homes, especially tract homes that are right next to each other, and people hide in their own little worlds. And people that are very active and busy during the day, it's fine to have a sleeping spot, either in nature or in your vehicle. And from time to time, there are many of us who can't rent or for certain periods of time, or just don't want to, or can't for long periods of time. So in any case, I don't think there are any very many problems either with parking vehicles. Like you said, I don't see any problems that would be very different than any of the regular problems that occur in cities that don't have to do with homelessness. So I think it's more just people's attitudes. They see someone outside parking in their neighborhood, and they've been trained to think that that is wrong or the lower. They don't respect that, basically. So they are, I think people's political attitude needs to change in this town. There's a lot of people choosing to live in their vehicles, and I think that should be something to work on.
Chris, would you like to relate your experience you had with the parking?
I'm a student trying to finish up at UC right now and trying to catch up on bills this quarter. I was back in my bus, and I have a VW bus because for that reason, from time to time, I like to live in that and not pay rent, because I figure paying rent is throwing your money away, and the way rental situations are in our country now, especially in Santa Cruz, I think we all need to wake up to the reality of the future, and that renting is not the only option, and it can't be, because renting is only for the landlords, and I think it's a lot of the homeowners that would feel that people should be able to sleep in their cars or sleep anywhere, which I would think would be a human right, since humans need to sleep, obviously, no matter what situation they're in. And I also feel that the city should, if they want to do something to help out the homeless, they should put more trash cans around, maybe recycle bins, and so there's not broken glass everywhere, and maybe have more public restrooms around. And
well, I'm ready to start responding to some of this.
Oh, good.
I'd be glad to respond.
Well, let's,
I don't want to interrupt the flow.
Go ahead.
Because I have some, I just want to say that, you know, you can see the breadth of the problem and the situation, the differences in attitudes and the need, and unfortunately, perhaps for some, the need to talk about it. We need to open up a discussion, and I'm very happy to open up that discussion, but when Chris suggests, for instance, that we need more recycling bins, you know, the city has to pay for whatever it does, and it costs money.
Okay, well, not recycling per se, but just trash.
Let's assume though.
Even
that,
if they're elected officials.
Yeah, even though. But what I wanted to say, just in defense of property owners or something, and of which I haven't paid any property taxes in my life except by through rent so far, in my whole life. And so I'm speaking for people that, whose lives, they can probably speak for themselves. But when they pay for sewer and water and taxes on property, they pay for all the services that you're talking about, for instance. And so when people decide to impact a neighborhood...
On public land and the public street?
People who pay those various fees, like the sewer, those kinds of things, or for the recycling center at the, down on Daimyo Lane, down... 3 miles north of the city. Those are things that we actually have to collect fees for, and things that we collect a fee for everybody's garbage can or something.
Tim, we collect a fee from all of Live Oak for them to be able to have our water.
Right.
And the problem that we're not facing, and there is sure a national problem, but there really is these sub-regional problems of towns like Santa Cruz that are the harbor, the bay, the main city, or the county seat, end up having to share to take the most of the weight of the entire county. I think what Michael Hernandez said about fair share is very, very important, because that's where we're going to find most of our solutions. The way the grants are coming down to the counties, the way things are coming down, we really have to make sure that we start the county fair share program as soon as possible. We have to force Watsonville and Scotts Valley and Capitola and the county all to the table. During this task force process, the worst amount of information and the least amount of information was from the county representatives. Health services was very good, but HRA gave us a laundry list of services that if you took it to the homeless services center, people would laugh at those being anything that they could use. The county was not coming forth with them from Veterans Affairs. The county did not participate in this process, so we're unable to solve a lot of problems in terms of service.
What is the story there from the city point of view?
About the county's involvement? Obviously what the city wants to do is work with the county and try to increase its involvement, and I think actually we've made some progress in that regard, and actually we're talking with people about that, but we can't compel the county in some respects. We can only look at what we can do, as insufficient as a city is. For instance, our general fund, the money that we can spend on all projects, including police and fire and everything else, is $30 million. The cost of rebuilding just the overpass at 1 and 17 is $31 million.
In other words, it's
state money. No, it's not. We're not spending that. I'm saying that these regional areas, these regional governments, the Regional Transportation Commission, of which I'm a member, and the state, and Caltrans, or whatever, these people are spending a lot of money. We have a very small amount of money in order to spend on these issues.
Can I ask a question? Do you know the figure of how much is being spent on the total package of the land and the loss of revenue and the expense for our new precinct?
Asking a difficult question. What exactly are you?
I want the whole cost. We're talking about not having money, and I'm really.
You're talking about the new
precinct?
Police headquarters?
Yeah, that is so large. I'm wondering.
What is the cost of the new?
I think it's about $10
million. $10 million? I think it might be more than that, actually.
And I believe they get that from other funding and things like that. I mean, it's not coming out of our pockets specifically, or out of the general fund specifically. It's something that's done based on FEMA money and a variety of other things after the earthquake. We were allowed to rebuild and all that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Where do the resources of government go? I was thinking about this all day.
I think about
rebuilding a freeway interchange for $30 million and not being able to address essential human problems. I'm wondering
if we're going to house police officers there, and I'm sure there's probably some themselves are battling homeless or homeless. I heard of a few, but anyway, I don't know about that because it's so large. Do we need that much? But anyway, that's done, and I appreciate your answer.
Well,
I think it was a good answer.
You know, I'd like to focus on, what direction can we go in to solve the problem?
Yeah.
I mean, we know how to attack what isn't being done.
Yeah. Could he address the issue of the possibility of homeless camp?
Yeah, let me address that issue. I'm not going to address it very effectively, but I'm going to say that there are two issues that are being brooded about. One is a rights issue or a liberty issue, or the issue that Chris is talking about. Do people, and the city needs to consider this, people in the city need to ask themselves this question. Does the city have a responsibility, moral or legal, to give people, let's say, the ability to live freely or, without various constraints? Is that imposed on us?
We have to pause briefly while the tape turns over. You're listening to Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice talking on the late February edition of Voices from the Village.
About one is a rights issue or a liberty issue, or I think the issue that Chris is talking about. Do people, and the city needs to consider this, people in the city need to ask themselves this question. Does the city have a responsibility, moral or legal, to give people, let's say, the ability to live freely, or, you know, without various constraints? Do we have, is that imposed on us in some way? And I'd love to hear people discuss this issue.
I'm going to pause here because this seems to me to be a very crucial and prejudicial way of framing the issue of the sleeping ban. He is not saying, does the city have the right to deny people the right to sleep without offering any alternative facilities? Rather, he suggests that somehow people are being given additional facilities when they're being told they can sleep without being arrested. It really seems to me to be a way of framing it which, in a way, invites a particular answer, namely that, oh, these are a bunch of freeloaders that should be driven away, or that we should first demand of them some kind of proof that they have the right to sleep at night. It's a way of phrasing things which, to me, tends to show that we have really a very dangerous kind of mentality here that Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice is exhibiting. I find it discouraging, depressing, ominous. And I've had several conversations with Tim. He's a nice guy. You know, he actually will have a meeting with you. When he says he's going to meet, he does meet, unlike Councilmember Crone, who doesn't seem to be willing to do that. You may remember he was going to get together with us to talk about a real alternative to the sleeping ban cosmetic changes that are going to be happening on Tuesday's city council meeting. He made that announcement publicly at the Thursday show, when we have our show from 6 to 8 here on Thursdays, and he called in, said he was going to meet and didn't. So Fitzmaurice does meet with you, but apparently what he has learned from all this is to look at the issue of the costs to the city and the fees and all the concerns that you have to have if someone is allowed to sleep in their vehicle. He doesn't talk about the costs of the police force being called in to haul people away, or the human costs when you deny women and children the right to sleep at night when they have no shelter. We don't hear any of that from Councilmember Fitzmaurice. No, we hear this, well, should the city facilitate a living for free lifestyle? It's really an ominous way of putting it. Let's continue listening to this council member that ran as a progressive.
All I'm saying, I'm not going to address it very effectively, but I'm going to say that there are two issues that are being brooded about. One is a rights issue or a liberty issue, or the ability to live freely, or, you know, without various constraints. Do we have, is that imposed on us in some way? And I'd love to hear people discuss this issue. In effect, Chris is saying we should open up, you know, the possibility for people to sleep everywhere. The city looks at itself and says, no, we're interested in creating codes, ordinances, development agreements that say we want to know exactly what the impact of your vehicle and your life is going to have on the community at large.
About making this an elitist city.
No, I don't agree that it's elitism to say we want to know when, you know, what your impact as a resident.
I'd like to inject my thought into this, because you
an excuse for an elitist city in the past.
You interpret his question as to be, we should allow people to, does the city have a responsibility to see that the people can sleep anywhere? But I would rephrase it to say, does the city have a responsibility, or does government, in this case city, have a responsibility to see to it that people can sleep somewhere?
Right.
And saying that, for example, in this context, that the armory is really not adequate for many people, and therefore is not adequate, and then what about the zoning issue? What area will be zoned? I see it as a zoning problem. What area will be zoned for sleeping?
Yeah,
for people who have no money.
I see it as a potentially a zoning problem. It's first of all, just to finish the thought, it's first of all the rights or liberty and a variety of other versions of that, a lot of impacts of that. It's second of all services and what the city needs to provide, what it can provide. and where those services come from, and what they're willing to provide.
The city is the repository of zoning power.
Right.
It is this. It has such power that if someone wanted to challenge it, they would have to go to the Supreme Court. At least that's what's happened in a number of cases. So with the stroke of a pen, you could say this acreage is for people who have no other place to sleep. You have that power.
Well,
is that correct?
Well,
do you know, I want to establish whether it is correct.
We can make zoning ordinances, yes.
So you do have the power to reform the way we look at land use.
I could work with the council, try to get 4 votes that would support changing. Well, for instance, when the beach area plan was instituted, they tried to change the zoning for a variety of different districts in the beach area from a residential to a commercial zoning. And the city council was quite interested in doing that without community input. They were quite interested in creating zoning changes. And one of the reasons that people were yelling about what was happening in the beach area was they said that the community had the right to input. But you're right. Essentially, the council can impose itself or can impose its will on a zoning ordinance or on a variety of other ordinances.
I'm not sure that a city or any government agency can zone away a class of people's rights. I don't think they can zone away. You can't have black and white zones in cities. You can't have zones that are homeless and non-homeless in terms of people's liberties. What you can't zone away is you can't zone away the right to sleep, which is what the current ordinance has done. So we have to undo the damage. It's not a question that we're trying to create damage. We have to undo the damage to human rights, and this is just on a human rights issue. And the way we can do that is by creating safe zones, safe sleeping zones. And this is by weighing the considerations of the neighborhoods and the homeless ability to be able to reach their services and to do the things. It's a very full day's work to be a homeless person. If you're trying to get up and out from under in any way, you have to go from one part where you have your property, another part where you can cook, another part where you face one bureaucracy and another bureaucracy. Then you have to try to get to a shelter, or you have to try to secure your property. It's a full-time job if you're trying to get out from under.
Which was shown to be unconstitutional in Miami, proven to be.
Yeah.
And
well, that's why it's unconstitutional.
Go ahead, both of you wanted to say something.
Yeah, that's why I feel that originally we should have done it right where the garden is. If people can live where they're gardening, if we're going to use these gardens as a step
this
for
is
people,
no guns,
if you live there, you can do that much more. You can garden better, number one. Some of the yards that when I was in being able to live in a tent, which I prefer, tell you the truth, to living in a vehicle. Living in a tent on the earth is just a wonderful quality way of life. You can have a phenomenal quality of life at a tent level. Now, if your garden's right around you, feeds you, cuts your costs, you know. Any yard that I've ever been in, I try to contribute on the water, you know. I try to not draw on resources. For example, even if the person has a washer and a dryer, I usually go away. I get my quarters, I go to the laundromat, because I'm trying to build my life. I'm also trying to not draw on the resources of wherever I am. This is the kinds of thing when I talk about like skills, like doors open if you know some of how to walk through them. We're forced right now, when you're really out there, you have to be a little deferential, or every door is going to be slammed shut. Until we get ready to make a community and countrywide step, then a lot of these skills, the more you can learn them, the more that doors can open. There are a lot of people in this community who would love to open people, but they've opened maybe once and got trashed, or, you know, communication skills weren't there and misunderstandings happen, the people get tossed away or whatever. These are the kinds of things that I feel that we mm-hmm. could pool and share information to help open doors. Because when I went to Croatia in 93, I went there specifically because I felt the negative energy in this town was scaring me. I thought I could begin to see how civil war could break out. So I went to the edge of the war zone on my bicycle. I got to stay with...
Holy a tramp was last as that day. He lay down by the rich man's gate. crumbs from the rich man to eat, but they left him to die like a tramp on the street. Jesus, he died on Calvary's field, gave his life blood for you and for me. They pierced his side, Lord, his hands and his feet, and they left him to die a tramp on the street. He was some mother's darling, he was some mother's son. Once he was fair and once he was young, then some mother rocked him, little darling, to sleep, and left him to die like a tramp on the street. If Jesus should come and knock on your door, would you let him come in and take from your store what you turn him away with? Nothing to eat, would you leave him to die like a tramp on the street? Here was Mary's own darling, he was God's chosen son. Once he was fair, once he was young, then Mary, she rocked him, little darling, to sleep, and she left him to die like a tramp on the street. Only a tramp was Lazarus that day. He lay down by the rich man's gate, begged for some crumbs from the rich man to eat, but they left him to die like a tramp on the street.
And that was Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Tramp on the Street. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrob Spear Robert Norris. We got 20 minutes left of Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, your Sunday afternoon Civil Rights for the Poor show. And I'm going to turn now to a subject that I think is important: political prisoners, people behind bars. And I'm thinking specifically of three political prisoners: Justin Gross, Rahula Janowski, and Gary Livernois, the Cherry Pie Three, as they call themselves. These are the three who planted a pie in the face of Willie Brown to bring the attention of the public and the media to his vicious anti-homeless policies in San Francisco, specifically his continuation of the so-called Matrix program, which rousted, arrested, destroyed the property of homeless people for such crimes as sleeping, sitting in public spaces, and being in parks after dark or after curfews when there are no legal shelter spaces in San Francisco. He's also been involved in cutting back on homeless services in terms of planned meetings with homeless people and expansions of services. He's come to power under essentially false pretenses. In a way, it's kind of reminiscent of what happened in the last election here in November when we got Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar parading their civil rights credentials, and then we hear Fitzmaurice talking about the community and going to the community before you're going to allow people to have civil rights and things of this sort. Brown came to power saying he wanted to end the kind of crap that was happening around the mass arrests of Food Not Bombs, the arrests of people for doing things that they have to do, like sleeping, or even taking a piss. I mean, frankly, unless there are public restrooms, and indeed there are more public restrooms in San Francisco, and that's good. In Santa Cruz, we're still waiting. Thank you, Chris Crone, and your task force to find bathrooms. Task force, indeed. You can't criminalize basic human functions if there's no other alternatives. I mean, that's really the basic point. Anyway, here's an article called Unjust Desserts. It's about the Biotic Baking Brigade. These are the three who are involved in planting a pie in the face of Willie Brown and getting 6 months in jail for doing so, for an action that didn't hurt anyone except the pride of Willie Brown, and exposed the reality of his anti-homeless policies in a fashion that made news. This apparently enraged the powers that be in San Francisco. Anyway, here's this interview by A. Clay Thompson in the March 3rd issue of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. The Biotic Baking Brigade got 6 months for pieing Willie Brown. Two members of the culinary underground speak out from behind bars. When he sentenced San Francisco's most notorious bakers to 6 months in prison, Judge Ernest H. Goldsmith invoked the specter of Dan White, the former supervisor convicted of killing Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk. Jerry Livernois, Rahula Janowski, and Justin Gross, three members of the Biotic Baking Brigade, didn't kill anyone. They just mushed three pies in Mayor Willie Brown's face in November. But according to Goldsmith, pie throwing like murder crosses the boundary of legitimate political protest. As citizens, you can work within this political system by volunteering for electoral campaigns or running for office, Goldsmith, the judge, said at the February 25th sentencing. You could have exercised those rights on November 7, 1998. The Cherry Pie 3 will likely spend 4 to 5 months in the clink for tossing pies to protest Mayor Brown's treatment of homeless people. The act rocketed their clandestine organization to international infamy. Since they banded together last year, brigadiers have pied economist Milton Friedman, Pacific Lumber owner Charles Hurwitz, and Supervisor Gavin Newsom, as well as Mayor Willie Brown. Before the sentencing, the brigade could have bargained for community service and 3 years probation. The brigade did not. The Bay Guardian interviewed Janowski and Gross on the sixth floor of the county lockup at 850 Bryant. Livernois, who was recently diagnosed with a brain tumor, was allowed to remain free for 2 weeks on $20,000 bail while deciding whether to appeal the sentence. Justin Gross, a member of radical environmental group Earth First, supports himself through carpentry. Rahula Janowski is a rainbow grocery checker and a veteran cook for Food Not Bombs, a grassroots group that feeds homeless people. Bay Guardian asks, "Were you shocked by the sentence?" Janowski replies, "I was a little surprised. I thought we'd get 60 days, maybe 4 months. It's really important for people to understand the context in which we refuse probation. Basically, being on probation would mean giving up our civil liberties and constitutional freedoms. While civil liberties and constitutional freedoms are somewhat illusory and the state can revoke them at will, when you're on probation, they're all revoked, and that is not acceptable. It's not as if we wanted to go to jail. None of us wanted to remove ourselves from our lives for such a period of time. But probation is 3 years of not being able to live our lives. Half of the people in here are locked up for probation violations. If that's not a clear sign of what probation is about, I don't know what it is." I'll interrupt this interview to say that in a probation violation, which can be such a minor thing as, quote, contact with police, you aren't given a jury trial. You are simply given a hearing before a judge. Probation is a very serious thing to accept, even though it's what the courts often want you to accept. I have never accepted probation, and I probably never will. And I've been jailed a dozen times, and I've spent about a month in jail, in the same jail that these three are in, for feeding people with Food Not Bombs. Their crime, of course, was bringing to the attention the criminal behavior of the mayor of San Francisco on homeless matters, and doing so in a fashion that simply embarrassed him, but didn't cause him any physical injury of any sort. Bay Guardian continues with its questions. It asks, has it been hard to keep the corporate media circus focused on your politics rather than your wacky antics? Justin Groth says, despite the best efforts of the media, we've managed to stick on message. That's something we've worked hard on a lot, redirecting the focus of questions back to what this is about. It's not about us being in jail. It's about Willie Brown knowing what Willie Brown is doing and what he needs to be doing. The Howie Mandel show wanted us to be on it. I threatened to pie anyone who went on it. Bay Guardian, would you say homelessness and the purge of low and moderate income folks due to housing costs is the number one issue for San Francisco right now? Justin Gross, there is no number one issue. It's like a deep ecology. Everything is connected to everything else. People who live on the streets of San Francisco belong to the earth. They're just as important as the ancient redwoods. It may not be as glamorous an issue, but it's equally important. That's why I have an easy time moving from activism in the woods to throwing pies at the mayor of San Francisco. It's all the same struggle. Bay Guardian, what do you make of Judge Goldsmith summoning the ghost of Dan White? That was so cynical, says Rahula Janowski. Dan White killed people and changed the face of San Francisco politics irrevocably. Harvey West used to pie people. He'd pie people on their birthdays. Harvey Milk used to pie people. He'd pie people on their birthdays. The comparison is ridiculous. Also, Dan White got off with an incredibly light sentence, considering he murdered two people, and we got a pretty heavy sentence, considering we pied someone. The whole thing with us not being repentant, well, I'm not. Willie is a perfect target for pie. The vehemence with which he's gone after us and charged his political allies to go after us is testimony to how much he deserved it. Bay Guardian. How did you feel when homeless deaths hit a new record high for 1998? Justin Gross, I was horrified, and to have people like Amos Brown, he's a supervisor who supports Willie Brown, and has been trying to have homeless people arrested for using shopping carts, wagging their fingers, morally outraged that we would throw a pie, it's disgusting. And that's an interview with A. Clay Thompson. A. Clay Thompson is interviewing two of the Biotic Bakery Brigade, the folks who put a pie in the face of Willie Brown to show just what a mess he was making of the situation in San Francisco for the basic civil rights of homeless people, and they are now spending 6 months in jail, or probably more like 4 months, but certainly a six-month jail sentence. If you want to write them, you can write them. Rahula Janowski can be found at, her number is 181-8075, that's her prison number, care of San Francisco County Jail, 8 E-Pod, 425 7th Street, San Francisco, California, 94103. Justin Gross is, you know, rather than reading these, I'm going to ask you to give me a call at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I'll be happy to give you the address of these three folks because they need you to write to them. They need you to know that there are folks out there who think that what they did was just great, just fine, and it's the politicians who should be in jail, not the people who are exposing them. And the number to call if you want their addresses in jail is 423-4833, 423-HUF. The reason that I raised this issue, because I've done a little piece on it already, I think about a week or two ago I did, is because I happened to see the New Mother Jones, the March-April issue, and it has a picture of a guy with a pie on his face, and the article says, "In Your Face Protest." There's an article on In Your Face Protest, and I was initially encouraged. I thought, wow, here's Mother Jones raising the issue and kind of combating all the negative publicity, because what happened after this pieing was, at first, it was the media had a big horse laugh at Willie Brown's expense, the mayor, which was the point, but then Brown's threats and his arguments, and he called it a racist maneuver because he was a black man and the piers were white. Everybody suddenly backed off and said, oh, this was a bad thing for them to do. It was irresponsible. It was violent. It was vicious. It was immature. Poor Willie Brown, poor San Francisco. Let's hike up the penalties. It was just a really strange and ominous kind of response in the media. And so when I saw this story in Mother Jones, I thought, oh, at last we're going to get some corrections here. Here's Mother Jones, the national left-wing news magazine. I'm sure we'll get some positive stuff. Well, as you can imagine from the way I'm talking, we got the opposite here, unfortunately. There's a big picture, a nice picture of Justin, Rahula, and Gerard with a big pie, kind of a 3-foot big pie well, kind of a cardboard representation of a pie, says, give homeless people a piece of the pie. And the name of the story is The Medium is the Meringue, Pie-Throwing Protesters Who Take Their Slapstick Seriously, by Anna Marie Cox. And there's a lot of sort of, well, I don't have time to read this whole article, but they end up criticizing the three of them for not being serious about what they're doing. But ironically, the author of this story in Mother Jones doesn't talk about the homeless issues at all. Doesn't talk about how homeless people are facing, what, 13,000 to 16,000 homeless people in San Francisco. There are less than spaces for less than 3,000 of them, and yet they're being arrested for sleeping. Their vehicles are being towed if they try to live in them. They are being arrested for being in public spaces at night or even during the day. Places like Civic Center Plaza, where they used to congregate, are being swept clean in the fashion, the time-honored tradition of Goebbels' approach in Germany, which those of you who've read the latest Street Spirit know, the German Nazis decided that the way to, that's ironic that Rula Janowski talked about this as well, the German Nazis wanted to reassure the German people by eliminating beggars from public spaces and persuading them that the economy and everything was getting better by essentially removing the visible symptoms of the Depression. And that's what, of course, Mayor Brown wants to do, and that's what we heard Mayor Giuliani doing in New York City. And it's not only a vicious attack on the civil rights of homeless people, it's a con game on the cities. It's a con game on the American people. It's the way the politicians have, like rounding up prostitutes at election time, like jumping on the prohibition bandwagon, like screaming for drug war activity, when you know that the more dealers you take off the streets, the more pushers you take off the streets, the more people are going to show up because the profits go up. It's a big scam. It's a huge hoax for the purposes of political gain for politicians, and for financial gain for police departments, which, you know, gives them more shiny, fun toys to play with. Anyway, it was depressing to see Mother Jones pulling the scam here and not backing these people. Instead, it kind of ridicules them as being sort of fuzzy-thinking earth-firsters who have a kind of a vague understanding of what's going on or aren't doing it very well. I'll give you an example of this. Page 82 of the March-April issue of Mother Jones. Combination of misinformation and shallow journalism makes for protest that is utterly ineffective if the payoff is I got in the newspaper. And they point out that there have been other pieings that they think are inappropriate. A letter of support the Biotic Bakery Brigade disseminated managed to bring in references to the new San Francisco Giants Stadium currently being built, Mumia Abu-Jamal, the mysterious death of a San Francisco poll worker, and the international labor movement. At times, it seems as though the Biotic Bakers Brigade members' own best intentions work against their chance of being understood. During the trial of the Cherry Pie 3, a reporter from CNN asks Gross, would it be fair to describe you as homeless advocates, but Gross equivocates, I'm involved in a variety of things, we're all really involved in a variety of things. The CNN reporter, happy to repeat on international television whatever specific cause the activist chooses to name, presses on, what do you spend most of your time doing? Gross grins, a lot of things. Trying to make him look pretty much like an idiot. I suggest that there's probably a lot of other specific things he said that CNN could have quoted or that this reporter in Mother Jones could have quoted. At our lunch near the courtroom, the Cherry Pie 3 and Katya Komisarek, the attorney, she was also my attorney, incidentally, a couple years ago when I was arrested with Homes Not Jails. She's a really hard-working, often pro bono attorney up in San Francisco. She also served years in jail for disabling a nuclear warhead down in Lompoc, I think about 10 years ago. Katya Komisarek. At our lunch near the courthouse, the Cherry Pie 3 and Komisarek grapple with the paradox of their media coverage. Komisarek is practical. Novelty is critical. Pieing is currently the tactic of the moment. In order to flourish, we'll have to come up with something else, she says. The media doesn't cover the same old, same old. Unless you can bring out huge numbers of people to your demonstration, you're not going to get anywhere. The purpose of these strategies, she adds, is to get people's attention, which means getting the media's attention. Janowski peels the mozzarella off her sandwich. The passage of history is sped up, she says, sped up so fast, she says, that it's hard to figure out an appropriate response to these times of rapid technological evolution. To use the term revolution is a slap in the face. We are philosophically cast adrift. We don't have ways to put what's going on into context. What is going on exactly? And she seems to kind of wander off the topic here. The topic to me is that the city is jailing people who are exposing abuses against homeless people for 6 months. And that, to me, is a direct attack on the First Amendment. And I've talked about this on the air before, and I've been criticized for equating pie throwing with First Amendment activity, but I think it is, in certain contexts, First Amendment activity. Yeah, it's a little shocking to get a pie in your face. Yeah, it's not something that most of us relish and would feel appropriate with. And it's technically, it's a battery, and maybe even be assault and battery if you're put in fear from it. But when you're a politician, and you're running a lot of shit by people, and you're hurting a lot of people, to get a pie in the face, I think, it can be a public service to get a pie in the face. Let's put it this way. To be giving someone a pie in the face can be public service, which leads into my public service announcement here. An evening of video activism is coming up tonight. It's a benefit for our favorite radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3, which is the radio station you're listening to. And it's called No Remorse. We got a free admission, and it's happening tonight, 7 to 11, at What Is Art, which is a little shop at 2044 North Pacific Avenue. The evening's going to include The Pie's the Limit, Whispered Media, a behind-the-scenes look at the pie-throwing antics of the Biotic Baking Brigade. See San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, Monsanto CEO Robert Shapiro, and other corporate and political stoolies get a taste of Humboldt Pie. Cream and Punishment, a documentary about the Belgian pie throwers, highlights of Bill Gates getting pied. This is tonight, Sunday at 7 o'clock. Donations are accepted at What Is Art, 2044 North Pacific Avenue. That's in the block right past the town clock as you head out of town. And lots of other stuff. There's Fire in the Eyes, Havoc Media documents Earth First activists and the use of pepper spray to torture protesters. Pepper spray, that's still accepted here in Santa Cruz by our fine police department. Earth First, Earth Pirate Radio First, short video about the Tree Radio Berkeley takeover of Redwood in Berkeley, and the 14-day radio occupation of 104.1. Features interviews with Stephen Dunifer and more. If you want information about this, give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-4523. 427-4523. That's tonight. A benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz, videos that you will enjoy watching. Sunday, March 21st, today, 7 to 11 p.m. at What Is Art, 2044 North Pacific. And I've suggested that folks bring pies to the city council meeting on Tuesday. I'm not suggesting folks throw pies. I don't necessarily think that's appropriate. That's might or might not be appropriate under some circumstances. But I think bringing the pies is it's an important way of attracting attention to the situation, because the city council is fundamentally selling out the homeless on this issue. Every night that homeless people are not allowed to sleep at night and face ticketing and arrest, harassment, outstanding warrants, and troll busters, people who kick homeless people in the face, usually non-homeless people, who are doing this for sport, this is on not just the conscience and the rap sheet of the city council. This, unfortunately, is our responsibility as a community. And we allow people like Fitzmaurice, Crone, Sugar, Rotkin, Matthews, Byers, Hernandez to speak in our name and to deny people basic civil rights in our name. That's our responsibility, unfortunately. That falls to us. And I guess the reality is it's not even who's to be blamed. It's that it happens night after night. Night after night, people scurry to find places to sleep, and then when they find them, the police rouse them. Or if they don't, they have to worry about being rousted, and they have to hide in circumstances where they can't be in a group, and they can't be in a situation where they're likely to be able to seek work the next day in any effective way. Where if they're a woman, you have to worry about even reporting an assault or a stalker to the police, because you have to worry about being arrested for sleeping. So sleep on that one, and while you do, you can consider giving a call to City Council. They're supposedly still tallying calls at 420-5020, and then push the 3 key and tell Keith Sugar it's time to get together and make a real sleeping ban change.